This podcast is about comets. The word comet comes from the English hairy star, or the Chinese call it a broom star. This is a star which looks like a star, but it's got a big tail on it. It's called a comet. And in this podcast, I'll talk about the amazing naming system for comets. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. I've been off the air for a while, having a redo to my heart operation, or my heart, which is back on the right track, and I've got to go through all this rehab, and part of the rehab is doing these podcasts. So one of the things I do is write short stories about science, do some creators programming, and read lots and lots of books. And the book that I've been recently reading is, I wish I don't have it, this is all from the top of my head, it's called Comets, Visitors from Space, from Deep Space, I think it's called. And you're reading through it, and as you do, you just are slowly storing information away about comets. So essentially, a comet is something which is volatile. It's a material of a very loose snowball. So it's got the density of 0.65 compared to the density of a water droplet, which is 1. So it's just like people have scooped up snow in a snow field, sort of fairly light, and packed it together. It's that light density. And it's orbiting, and its orbit is eccentric, elliptical, and so its orbit takes it whizzing past the sun, and when it whizzes close to the sun, it heats up, creates vapor, and the vapor creates several conditions. Basically, a cloud is formed in space, so water vapor forms little water droplets like in space, like on Earth, a cloud on Earth. So we have water vapor on Earth is transparent, so water vapor in space is also transparent. But when it forms droplets, so if you see clouds above you, they're standing on a column of water vapor. It's only when the water vapor condenses into little drops, little condensates, and that condensate is very big, and this forms the tail. I'll talk about the tail a bit more, but the tail can be quite small for a couple of degrees. If it's a couple of degrees, bear in mind the moon is half a degree wide. It's 3 times the length of the moon, or it can stretch to 90 degrees, or even the entire sky. Of course, that's when the Earth itself passes through the comet's tail. So the comet, say, is obviously, it could be approaching us, or it could be coming from the sun towards us, or it could be coming from deep space towards the sun. It doesn't matter, the tail's always swept by the solar wind away from it. So this is one of the beautiful things. And if the Earth actually travels through the tail, it will appear 360 degrees if that happens. So we've had some fairly close encounters where it's, I think it's over 90 degrees. We haven't had the full 360 degrees total coverage of going inside a comet's tail so far. But I want to get on to the naming of planets. Sorry, the naming system of comets, because it's sort of rather an interesting sequence. It's slightly it's lovely and detailed, and it's a bit quirky, and it's beautiful. So you have our most famous comet, Halley's Comet, P. Halley 1. P stroke Halley 1 means this is the first periodic comet, and it's discovered by Halley. It's named after Halley, and it's his first comet. So Halley could discover 3 or 4 or more comets, or if Halley was an institution, he could discover thousands of comets. And P means periodic, so although historically it has a date of discovery, because it's got a period typically under 200 years, I think that's the cutoff. This means, sorry, I'm having a bit of a cough here. I've still got good lung capacity coming back off the last operation. I'll give it a podcast on the maths of the operation, lots of bits of maths of that. But getting back onto this, so P, it's P is your letter designation of the type of comet. Now, there's two comet belts. One, the Kuiper, that's, I can't pronounce it, I've just read it, Kuiper belt from 30 to 50 AU. AU is atomic unit, is the Earth sun distance, which is, the Earth sun distance is roughly 150 million kilometres, and the sun's roughly, I think, 114 million kilometres away across. So basically, if the sun's a centimetre, the Earth is orbiting at 1.5 metres to scale. Or you have the 1 to a trillion scale. The sun is a millimeter, and the Earth is orbiting 15 centimeters away. So the so the sun's a millimeter, 150 millimeters. It's half a ruler width. And just to give you a sort of mental picture, the moon. It's roughly 400,000 kilometres away. So it's the rate, the diameter of its orbit is 800,000 kilometres. So that would sit about one third of the way in. If you saw the sun and you imposed the Earth and the sun, the moon as an orbit, actually on the disk of the sun at that distance, the Earth would be a hundredth the size of the sun, so you could probably pick it out, but the orbit would fit inside, the moon's orbit is inside the diameter of the sun, just to give you an idea there. So at 20 to 30 AU, you've got comets which hark from they range from Jupiter to Uranus in. They're the periodic ones. They have periods of as small as, I suppose, some are the shortest ones have had 3 years. This is just all information just piled in, just reading this book. Halley's 76, and you can get some other ones. And so the orbit's elliptical. So this means that it, when it's a long way away, it's going too slow for that orbital distance and then falls into the sun. And when it's getting towards the sun, it goes too close, and the gravitational centripetal acceleration could swing the comet around. So that's Kuiper ones, and they're the P comets. And then you have the Oort ones, which are from 200,000 AU to 500,000 AU. So this is a massive distance, quarter of a way towards our to the Alpha Centauri. This is a great distance away. So these comets effectively have such a long period, a few hundreds, thousands of years, millions of years, that they're not periodic as far as the human lifespan is concerned. So periodic refers to the lifespan. And now the Kuiper belt or periodic comets are all pretty much confined or closely to the orbital plane of all the planets. All the planets form a planetary orbital plane. And the Kuiper or the periodic comets are all fairly close in. So they all hark from the zodiac signs. That's where I think it's called the ecliptic. So they're P's. The ones from the Oort belt, where they think there's, oh, I don't know, a trillion comets. But even then, when you add up the mass of those comets, it's only, I think, about a fifth the mass of the Earth. This is just all just reading the book, absorbing the information, and just spurting it out on a podcast. So these are C comets. So they only come in once. And so this is where you get your, you've got your P, with the periodic, so you don't need the date. Sea comets, you do need the date to get them across. So they're designated by the following weird-ass system. It's the year, then the half-month of A to... I'm trying to X, Y, Z to X, because you've got 24 letters there, and you use those letters. So the A is the first half of January, B is the second half of January. And so then if it's in that pot of January, or section of the month, that's the number of the comets which are discovered within that month and officially registered. So for each half month, you have an open register. And so it can be the 20th, 30th comet seen, but then they check it, and then it's over into the next half month. So it could be D30, but no, it's, you've seen it a bit later, it's actually be E1 as it goes through. So you've got this complicated, and then the name of the discoverer. So you have this rather unique scheme of the year 2018. This is, what is it, April, eight letters in, and they'll be going in, and then the name of the discoverer. And in this case, the discoverer is most likely a robot, so it'll be Ison or something like that. I think Linea, the Americans, got a group together with NASA and their military and got the word linear out of it. So that's the name of the different comet spotting program. So essentially they look for anything which has got a gassing atmosphere. That's the definition of a comet. And so you've got this usual thing. Then you've got really the first recorded comet in history in 44 BC. And that has a year of minus 43, which is correct because there's no 0 BC. So it's rather like it's really super, super accurate. It's self-consistent, super accurate, but sort of a lot of fuss about that first, that says Julius Caesar's first comet, which came in. And then there's these comets in their record where they're recorded. Oh, sorry, there's those terms. I might as well go through it. There's the X-year comet, and really there's insufficient data to tell whether this is a periodic comet or a from the Kuiper belt or one from much further out from the Oort belt. The Oort belt's ones have to by necessarily have to even reach the inner solar system have to have a very narrow, very elliptical path. So they go some of them are called sun grazers and go past the sun. So far you've got P, the discoverer's name, C, year, half month, number of the half month, then the discoverer, X, which is basically the year and the discoverer. It's a combination of those two things. Then you've got another class of D comets. I think there's only two or three of these, which are comets which you watch, they get a C, and then they get obliterated, and they sort of mostly slam into the sun or to a planet like Jupiter, like the Schumacher-Levy comet that's pulled apart and then pulled into the sun, the X. And then there's people who've claimed to see a comet, but it never develops a really a large glow, and they're actually reassigned from C back to A for asteroids. So you've got this rather cute naming system of the comets, and of course on another one as I read through it, we're just going through all the missions and the densities and the what's actually contained in comets as opposed to asteroids and the backgrounds. But it's rather interesting to read and get this funky type of information, and also look at the different regions that the comets come from. Now the interesting theme, so if it's a Kuiper, I can't pronounce it, belt, you'll have to look it up on the internet. And the Oort cloud, now the Oort cloud, Kuiper belt, is like a ring, a disc, like Saturn, it's flat, it's relatively contained, where the Oort cloud is highly perturbed. It's all going in the same, I suppose, sense, but it's a sphere an orbiting sphere. Now, one of the things I'm pretty sure that is that the angular momentum of the comets follow the angular momentum of the planets, and that the planets are basically, as seen from above, travelling anti-clockwise, and the comets also loop in an anti-clockwise way, and the sun and the moon, as seen from above, looking from the northern hemisphere down through to the southern and into the galactic centre, it's all going anti-clockwise. I'm pretty sure, I haven't seen any reports so far of an anti-clockwise comet, but I'm just out and looking at it. So yeah, I recommend reading these books, and you basically have to have your half your brain open just to record these facts as it's written. So it's quite a good book and book read. And this is my first podcast after my operation. I'm on the strict rehab limits, so I can't. It'll be a while before I actually do a podcast while I'm actually walking, which I have to do, or I have to actually walk at a pace which I can actually podcast and rehabilitate. These are slightly longer ones, but that's an interesting one to start you off. And I might do a little one on some of the mathematics of my my operation, which is rather interesting. Thanks a lot. I'm a bit not short of breath. I've just got this throat thing, which I'm just a bit sensitive about, coughing, having had my chest cut open recently. So thanks for listening, and in the meantime, keep on doing science.